From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Thursday, August 4th, 2016, I trust that you all are having one fantastic week. And if not, we plan on making it just a little bit better. All right, we have a great 60 minutes of sports talk in store for all of you out there on today's Current Sports. The Detroit Tigers stay hot. That's right, they pushed their winning streak to 8 straight games in a very close dub over the Chicago White Sox last night. And I tell you what, one man made one triumphant return to the game. We'll talk about that. Also, yeah, folks, the coaches' college football rankings have literally just came out. We'll tell you where Michigan State and Michigan stand. And, hey, Colin Cowherd of Fox Sports sounds off on the whole Michigan State and U of M rivalry. So yet another Fox Sports host in the world of radio, sort of ruffling the feathers of Michigan State fans everywhere. So we'll chat about that. And also we'll invite to the show our dear friend and former current sports assistant, Omari Sankofa, former sports writer for the State News, now a contributor for Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush. Omari has written an interesting article that centers on probably the most popular basketball tournament in the summer that there is, with a, get this, a $2 million payout for the winner. I kid you not, folks. We'll talk about that. Also, we'll hop into our current sports time machine and hit you with Throwback Thursday. That and more. If you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, the championship games for the Moneyball Pro-Am are taking place tonight. After the first round of semifinals games, which took place on Tuesday, Lady Navy and Lady Gray have advanced to the championship game in the inaugural year of the Women's Moneyball Pro-Am. How cool is that? Current and former Michigan State Spartans playing in the game include Jasmine Hines, Tori Jankowska, Annalise Pickrell, Brandy Agee, Lauren H., Jenna Allen, and Akaya Taylor. In the second set of games of Team Black and Team Green, who advanced in the championship game of the Moneyball Pro-Am, that's right, the men will take the hardwood. Both teams have two Spartans playing. Team Green has Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nairn Jr., and freshy phenom Miles Bridges, while Team Black as Gavin Schilling and Mr. Josh Langford. The games begin at 6:30 and 7:30 tonight at Aim High out in Diamonddale, Michigan, and admission is totally free. All right, Pennsylvania star Lamont Wade, a four-star recruit ranked as the number 58 prospect in the 2017 class, he dropped the University of Michigan from consideration today. He tweeted that U of M made his scholarship offer contingent on attending a camp at the University of Michigan. That was enough to bother him. He tweeted, quote, "Michigan was my dream school until they told me I was a second-level player and needed to come to camp to get an offer," end quote. His other list of finalists include Alabama, Mississippi State, Ohio State, Penn State, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, UCLA, and West Virginia. Yesterday, we talked about how Mark D'Antonio and his interview with a Fox Sports radio show just went totally awry, which led to D'Antonio eventually hanging up after a weird series of questions. Later that day, another popular Fox Sports personality, Mr. Colin Cowherd, formerly of ESPN, contributed to the narrative. Cowherd identified four shadow programs, schools that no matter what they do will be, quote, second tier in their state. He listed Auburn in relation to Alabama, UCLA to USC, Texas A&M to Texas, and Michigan State to Michigan. While admitting that all of these shadow schools are top 20 caliber programs, Cowherd said they can't escape their neighbor. We'll have more on that in just a second. The Detroit Tigers defeated the Chicago White Sox last night for their eighth straight dub. J.D. Martinez gave them a huge boost, stepping off the disabled list and coming off the bench for a go-ahead pinch-hit homer off of Chris Sale in the eighth inning, giving the Tigers a 2-1 win. Now, Tigers center fielder Cameron Maben will get the day off today with a sprained thumb, although test results show no structural damage. So, hey, Tigers fans, no need to panic when it comes to Maben, even though he's had his ups and downs when it comes to injuries. Tigers manager Brad Ausmus said Maben is day-to-day, and he could be used as a pinch runner if needed. The Detroit Lions thank police, firefighters, and emergency medical technicians by presenting them with about 2,000 tickets to an exhibition game at Ford Field. Team president Rod Wood joined Kelly Stafford to greet the first responders from Allen Park, Dearborn, and Detroit and their families before they watched yesterday's practice. Of course, Kelly Stafford is the wife of current Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford. Now, the special invitation to the practice had been in the works for a while, but the free tickets to either one of those two games were a complete surprise. Russell Westbrook is about to get paid. This morning, reports began to surface that Russell and the Oklahoma City Thunder have an agreement in place which will pay Westbrook $85 million over the course of 3 years. The extension will tack on extra salary this year and add two additional years on his deal, including a player option for 2018-2019. So Russell Westbrook stays loyal and gets paid. Hint, hint, Kevin Durant. All right, moving on. Chicago Sky star and reigning WNBA MVP Elena Deladon has told Vogue magazine that she's gay, according to OutSports.com. In the article, which has yet to be published online, Deladon revealed that she is engaged to Amanda Clifton, 26-year-old member of the U.S. women's basketball team, and Clifton has shared photos of themselves together on Instagram. Quote, "It was just one of those articles where they came into my home, spent a couple of days with me, and fiance Amanda Clifton is a huge part of my life. So to leave her out wouldn't have made any sense. It's not a coming out article or anything. I've been with her for a very long time now, and people who are close to me know that. And that's that," end quote. That's what Don told reporters in Rio via ESPN. And last but not least, if you are a golf aficionado, you want to get out and buy up as many Nike clubs as you can, because Nike, the most valuable sports brand in the world, is stepping out of the golf equipment business. A company press release indicated that Nike will transition out of equipment, including clubs, balls, and bags, to focus on footwear and apparel for the sport. Now, Nike, which reported flat to down annual sales in its overall golf business in the last 2 years at just north of $700 million in annual sales, which does include shoes and apparel, has been in the golf business since 1984, but only introduced its first clubs in 2002 with the Pro Combo set of irons. Its sales in 2013 and 14 were nearly $800 million. There is no indication what will happen to Nike's present tour staff, which, in addition to Tiger Woods, includes number 4 Rory McIlroy and 14 new players signed in this year alone. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to be a part of today's show, you probably got that number on speed dial. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Here we go.
Michigan State's one of these. There's 4 jobs in the country, and I would call them shadow jobs. that no matter what you do, you're always in the shadow of another in-state school. And I don't count, and to qualify for this, you have to be a top 20 program. All, you know, like a top 20 program. I wouldn't count the Florida, Florida State, Miami, because they've all taken turns rotating on who's the big dog in the school. But Michigan State, Auburn, UCLA, and Texas A&M are by themselves top 20, 25 programs. They will always be second tier in their own state. Doesn't matter if they beat them. Doesn't matter if they win the game. Michigan State will always be overshadowed by Michigan, Auburn by Bama, UCLA by USC, and A&M by Texas. It's just the history, the money, the exposure. I would call them the four shadow programs. Programs that themselves are top 20 programs, and coaches feel like this is big boy football. But in their own state, they're considered second-class citizens.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And as I customarily do, I love to start each and every show with the most interesting thing that I've heard in the last 24 hours leading up to 1 p.m. today. And that was the voice of Colin Cowherd on his Fox Sports radio show, The Herd. Colin, of course, formerly of ESPN. Cowherd weighed in on this whole U of M and Michigan State disrespect dialogue that has really been sparked this week because of two radio hosts that really didn't know what they were doing in interviewing head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, yesterday morning. We played the interview and talked about the interview extensively on yesterday's show. The line of questioning was just very, very puzzling. And it really, they didn't ask anything about the team until like the fourth or fifth question. So it was really just a head scratcher. So we talked about that interview on yesterday's show, and it sparked up a lot of conversation, a ton of conversation, folks. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you had Colin come out and make these comments concerning shadow teams, you know, and as I stated in our quick hit headliners, you know, Cowherd went on to talk about how he believes there are four, quote unquote, shadow programs in the world of college sports, schools that no matter what they do, no matter if they beat that respective rival or not, they will always be number dos in their state. He listed Auburn as a shadow program in relation to Alabama, UCLA as a shadow program in relation to USC, Texas A&M to Texas, and Michigan State to Michigan. And there have been a lot of people, I've been reading different blogs here and there, and there have been a lot of Spartan and Wolverine fans alike that have been weighing in on this conversation. And I must say, first off, that I agree with Mr. Cowherd to a certain extent. I must say that because when you evaluate how the Michigan State football program, how it's covered on the national stage in comparison to Michigan, which has come nowhere near the success of Sparty on the gridiron when you look at the last 6 years, it's a bit unfair. It's a bit unfair, and it makes you wonder why. It really does. But I do believe that Cowherd's wording needs to be tweaked a bit here. I don't know if you can go with the conversation of Michigan State will always be looked at as a second-tier program in relation to U of M. The reason I say that is because I'm standing firm with my statement that I had on yesterday's show. Michigan State, in order to get out of the shadow of U of M football, Michigan State needs to win a national championship. Simple as that. When you win a national championship, you silence all of the doubters. There is no shadow to hide under if you do that, because you are the top dog in the sport. And speaking of the sport, also, I want to say that Cowherd needs to be very clear that he's just talking about college football here, because when you compare the college basketball programs of Michigan State and Michigan, there is clearly more coverage centered on the Spartans than U of M. Simple as that. I mean, you even when I'm watching like NBA broadcasts, I mean, I hear Tom Izzo's name brought up constantly. And I hear that 2000 Flintstone national men's basketball team brought up constantly. And when you talk about U of M, on the other hand, I mean, heck, you hear a lot about the Fab Five. You know, Chris Webber, Jalen Rose and company, and they were clearly trendsetters. But if you remember, that team never won a national championship. And then as years went on, of course, they were, you know, marred with scandal in the whole Ed Martin situation. And it's a big reason why Chris Webber won't even come on the U of M campus. So it all depends on the sport. Michigan State clearly has more formidable recognition when it comes to the game of basketball, the game of college basketball. But again, when it comes to college football, despite the fact that Michigan State has completely owned the Wolverines in the win column the last 6 years, it really doesn't matter. And still, Michigan is everywhere, especially the hype train has been ramped up to 1,000 with Jim Harbaugh, and he's taking off his shirt and playing with campers, and he's got satellite camps everywhere. They just signed with the Jordan brand, and that's been everywhere. I was just driving around yesterday, and just about every sports talk radio show I listened to had at least one segment on the U of M Jordan brand, which I think is very cool, by the way. I don't think that a lot of quote-unquote old-timer sports fans realize just how big that deal is. A very cool deal. But that's dominating the headlines more so than Michigan State, you know, coming off a yet another Big Ten championship, participating in the college football playoff. That's like an afterthought in relation to the U of M program right now. So in order for Michigan State to get out of that shadow, I agree with Colin Cowherd with what he had to say in relation to the college football programs of U of M and Michigan State. But I don't agree with the word always. Michigan State can get out of that shadow if they go out there and win a national championship. Easier said than done. But at the same time, you know, it's something that I think Michigan State fans should be a bit irked at. And I think it's going to be used as motivation for Mark D'Antonio and his team moving forward, if it already hasn't. And Mark D'Antonio now, he's entering his 10th season. Can't believe it's been 10 years already now that Mark D'Antonio has been the head football coach of the Michigan State team. Pretty impressive stuff. So, and also, as I stated to start the show, the preseason Amway coaches poll has just come out. And I just want to go through the rankings really briefly. I'll go through the top 15 rankings of the coaches poll. And right now, Alabama sits at number one in the preseason poll. Number two is the Clemson Tigers. Number three, the Oklahoma Sooners. Four, FSU, Florida State. Number five, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Number six, the LSU Tigers. How about that, Isaac? Number seven, the Stanford Cardinal. At eight, yes, the University of Michigan. The Michigan Wolverines come in place. Number nine, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Number 10, the Tennessee Volunteers. At number 11, on the outside of the top 10, looking in, the Michigan State Spartans. 12, Ole Miss Rebels. 13, the Houston Cougars. 14, the TCU Horned Frogs. And at number 15, you have another Big Ten squad in the Iowa Hawkeyes. So what do you think of that list? Again, Michigan State sits at number 11 on that list. You have Ohio State sitting at number 5. And at number 8, you have the Michigan Wolverines. Do you think they got it right? And no surprise really there. I mentioned how when you look at the at many polls, it goes Ohio State, U of M, and then Michigan State to come out and possibly win the Big Ten championship. And, yeah, all three of those teams come out of the Big Ten East. Out of the West, you clearly have a favorite in the Iowa Hawkeyes to participate in that Big Ten championship game. And justifiably so. I think Iowa, you know, they have a lot of pieces coming back from last season that are going to be huge contributors as they walk into this 2016-17 year. So what do you think about that poll? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before moving forward and talking about the Detroit Tigers, who, wow, man, oh, man, they look good, don't they? Before we dive into the Tigers, I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Mr. Isaac Constance. Isaac, what do you think about what Colin Cowherd had to say when concerning shadow programs in the world of college football?
I think we've had two Fox Sports radio hosts in the past week who have no idea what they're talking about. Colin Cowherd, on the other hand, I think he's a genius. I think he's right on point. And I'm actually going to differ from you, even with the wording. I agree with him on the always. Now, always, forever, ever, ever, ever? No, of course not. But what he meant, I think, is in the very near foreseeable future, and even if MSU manages to win a championship, I don't think that puts a dent in the Michigan versus Michigan State complex.
And really? You're telling me a national championship?
Yes.
If Mark D'Antonio were to lead the Spartans to a national championship, and let's say they beat somebody big like Alabama, you're telling me that Michigan State, in present time, history aside, will not be looked at
It's
favorable?
Viewed as inferior still.
I don't agree with that.
Well, here's the counterexample I've got. The Auburn-Alabama rivalry. One of the two teams that Colin Cowherd brought up as the in-state shadow schools. And Auburn, of course, won the championship. Cam Newton, they had one of the most incredible comebacks in college football history. Alabama was up 28-0 heading into the fourth quarter. Cam Newton leads that team back 31-28. But hey, Colin's right, because no matter how much, in what fashion you beat the other program, that doesn't matter.
Well,
it matters about other things. But
I think if you win a national championship, though, I think that would take Michigan
Auburn
State right
did
out of the
win a national
I understand
championship.
I think, and I also think it's different when evaluating rivalry to rivalry. I don't think you can loop all rivalries into the same conversation, if you ask me. I think they all have their different feel and a different personality, if you will. So, but if that won't do it, Isaac, what will then? You know, that's my question.
It's going to take years and years and years, because it's the history that needs to be eroded, the gap in that, because Michigan is the winningest team in college football history, just about. That's what they're perceived as. They've got a brand. Heck, Jordan wanted them. It's the first ever college football sponsorship from Jordan. So, honestly, it's going to take time. Nothing besides time will even out this rivalry, no matter how many championships Michigan State wins. And that's an exaggeration. If Michigan State wins 10 in 15 years,
right,
yeah, that flips the script. But it's going to take a lot. And the way I look at it is two ways. Recruiting. Michigan, even in their down years, still got the recruiting edge time and time again over MSU.
That's history. And also when it comes
that's
to
history. But that's also
Jim
true
Harbaugh.
This year.
Yeah, and also the Jim Harbaugh effect. And also when it printers respect.
Well, Brady Hoke, though, was constantly pulling in top five classes.
He was, because of history, you know, because of what the track record of U of M. But Harbaugh is taking it to another level now, I think.
Well,
and with this Jordan brand, I want to make this point as well, because I was also listening to different talk show hosts around the area and beyond, and I don't think that a lot of quote-unquote old-timer sports fans know just how significant from a recruiting standpoint this Jordan deal is. Isaac.
Good point.
I'm from the west side of Detroit, okay, born and bred. And the Jordan brand, that's when I was growing up in my youth, the Jordan brand was larger than life and still is. It amazes
it is.
Me just how big it is. I grew up in an area where I saw friends of mine get jumped for rocking Michael Jordan shoes. They were that popular. I remember at Fairlane Mall, when the new Jordans would come out, the lines would be absolutely ridiculous, especially if Jordan decided to drop those shoes around the holidays and Christmas time. That jump man holds so much weight. And when kids see that, when they walk into the U of M program on campus and see that Jumpman everywhere, I mean, heck, Drake even just made a song about Jumpman.
Yes, he did.
I mean, it's so larger than life that when kids walk in and they see the Jordan brand and they see the Jordan gear, it doesn't take much to woo a 16, 17-year-old kid, okay? When they see that you're sponsored by the greatest of all time in Michael Jordan, this is going to do a lot for the already stout Michigan recruiting realm.
Well, and of course, he's appearing at one of their games as well. No, you're exactly right. You made a great point right there. A pair of Jordans are basically two blocks of 24-karat gold. That is the weight of their importance on this program. It is so important. And when you look at the deal that they signed, 15 years with Nike, $169 million for this new sponsorship. And that's how I compare these two programs when it comes to supremacy. You got to do it with the dollar sign because Michigan State, as better as they've been than Michigan in recent times, 10 years, $34 million, $3.4 million a year as compared to over $10 million a year. And Michigan State, we can all agree, they're the better program right now. You would rather go to MSU to win than you would Michigan. But Michigan, they managed to get the dollars. They managed to get the recruits. They managed to get the flashy Jordan sponsorships. All of that still lands on the Block M. And there's a reason for that. It's history, it's prestige, and it's reputation. And it's going to take a lot more than a championship to overturn that.
So what do you folks think? I want to hear from our listeners. What is it going to take for the Michigan State college football program to be looked at in a different light than what it currently is in relation to the guys down the street and out in Ann Arbor at U of M? What do you think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Would you agree, though, that when evaluating the basketball programs, that MSU clearly has the upper hand right now?
Oh, yeah. And I think that comes down to history.
That's
as
a no-brainer. No-brainer.
MSU, home of Magic Johnson. MSU's got the history edge there. Well, I'd compare the football programs, too, though. Just one last comparison is you brought up Drake with Jumpman, Drake and Future. Kanye West, of course, put out the song which was defiling the Jumpman brand. What was it? Yeezy just jumped over Jumpman? Something like that.
It's some stupid.
That's why I compare the MSU versus Michigan rivalry as. And I don't hate on MSU whatsoever, but MSU keeps trying to topple the University of Michigan. Every single thing is, well, look at this play. Look at our rivalry victories recently. And to me, that does show the little brother, big brother superiority complex. Not in terms of talent on the field, but just in terms of mentality.
I don't think it's a
constant struggle between the two.
But I don't think that MSU goes out of their way to say, look at what we do in comparison to U of M.
They may
do that behind closed doors. They don't do that in the media, though. I mean, they don't do that in the press. I mean, for example, when it comes to the whole U of M and Michigan State rivalry, you know, when it comes to college football or even in basketball, I mean, us as media members, we go to the press conference, and what does Mark D'Antonio do? He says, hey, of course, this game means a lot more than other games, but at the same time, we're going to go out there, treat it like any other game, go out there and play hard.
See,
rarely do you see bulletin board material from the Michigan State side.
Oh, see,
U of M, there's a history of that. I mean,
I would debate that strongly. Well, Pride Comes Before the Fall by Mark D'Antonio.
The reason why he made that statement.
The spear in the field.
Isaac, the reason why he made that statement is because Michael Hart, he had the first
jab.
But
that feeds into it. It's okay to take a jab.
But Michigan State, if you see any controversy during that rivalry week, it won't be coming from the Michigan State side. It is mostly, more than likely, coming from U of M because history shows that immensely. You go back, you talk about Pride Comes Before the Fall. Mark D'Antonio wouldn't have had that candid quote if it wasn't for Mike Hart saying, "Yeah, they're our little brothers."
Oh no, they try to provoke it, but don't get me wrong. Of course they do, but that's football game day mentality. For MSU though, this is not a game on the schedule. This is the precursor to a national championship.
Right, but Michigan
State.
Michigan State doesn't go out their way from a media standpoint. They don't go out their way to say, hey, look at what we do in comparison to U of M. I'm 100% sure they do that when a recruit comes on campus because you got to play the game. You have to show them that, hey, this is better than Ann Arbor. But I don't think they don't do that in the media, which is a totally different realm. I also want to say, before we hit this first break and bring on our guest for today's show, that what will aid in that perception being changed is us, the media, the way we cover the Michigan State and U of M rivalry. Because far too often,
we see U of M put on this pedestal, and not deservingly so, when it comes to media outlets like the big dogs, ESPN, like Fox Sports. I mean, you best believe that if Jim Harbaugh was on SportsCenter, or if Jim Harbaugh was on Fox Sports, you know, that daily show the bite that we ran on yesterday, that he wouldn't have gotten a question about Mark D'Antonio.
Yes.
I can rest assured that.
Jim Harbaugh never be called John Harbaugh.
Right, no, yeah. Never. The way the media covers those two has a lot to do with it as well. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will chat with Omari Sankofa, former sports writer for the State News, now a contributor for Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush. And we'll also, of course, chat about the Detroit Tigers, winners of 8 straight games, the hottest team in the majors. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKER's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Wow, the Olympics start this week. Are you kidding me? You know, there's been so much press. Man, hold on, I had to stop in my tracks. Man, that is a great song, by the way, Isaac. Oh, my goodness. You really threw it back with that one, man.
I had to.
Wow, you just threw off my entire train of thought. Anyway, the real Olympics start this week, okay? And there have been just many articles written on the heinous conditions out in Rio de Janeiro. And so much so that I even read an article that there are officials out in Rio warning swimmers and those who are participating in other water events to not keep their heads under the water for too long because you might get sick. Water pollution is rampant out in Rio right now. There's a lot of political unrest taking place as well. And there are many individuals who have been driven to homelessness because of the new facilities that have been built over the course of the last 4 years, trying to get the Olympics up and going. And I actually sat back and watched. It was an hour and 24-minute long special centered on the Olympics as a whole, done by HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, in which they had four reporters, including Bryant, go to the different locations that have taken place in the Olympics in the last, you know, like 8 years, including London, Russia as well, Rio, of course, and China. And it was really interesting to listen to the report because of just all of the corruption that goes on within the International Olympic Committee, better known as the IOC, and, you know, how the IOC, members of the IOC have been involved in just dirty stuff, okay, when it comes to payoffs and money and so on and so forth. It's really crazy. But it is also interesting because I think an interesting point was made during the special that there's always some dialogue of scandal and corruption that takes place on the eve of the Olympics. But when you sit back and watch the Olympics throughout the course of the next 3 weeks, you know, it will go off pretty seamlessly. You know, you won't see stories that bash everything that's happening around the events. So I just want people to keep that in mind because we will be talking about it as the Olympics get started here. We'll be talking about not only what's taking place with the 10,000 athletes and their sports, but also the conversations that need to be had concerning how the Olympics are organized and the individuals who, again, are homeless because of this one event that will last 2 weeks, okay? So we will cover both sides of it, and I want to remind you all that, hey, Current States, which airs weekdays at 9 a.m. on WKAR 90.5 FM, Current State will be airing our chat with Emily Reagan, who is a member of the Michigan State rowing team, who is now a member of the U.S. Olympic women's rowing team. And we had an interesting conversation with Emily. So if you missed it on our airwaves here on Current Sports, catch it tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on 90.5 WKAR FM radio. All right, folks, I want to get to our guest for today's Current Sports. His name is, of course, Omari Sankofa, a dear friend of our airwaves, former sports writer for the State News, now a contributor for Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush. And Omari, I want to get Omari on the show because he's written a very eyebrow-raising article centered on a basketball tournament that actually paid out $2 million. $2 million to the winner. And it's arguably looks like it's the biggest basketball tournament of the summer here. And it's entitled The Basketball Tournament. Very original name. I kid you not. The name of it is The Basketball Tournament. I think it's also a fitting name as well. So to talk about that and so much more, we now invite Mr. Omari Sankofa of SI. Omari, first off, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, dude. So first off, tell us about The Basketball Tournament, because when I read your article, which was posted on Facebook, I was very intrigued right off the bat. For those that don't know much about it, what is The Basketball Tourney?
Right, so basically it's a tournament that was created about 3 years ago in 2014, and anybody can sign up for it as long as you're over the age of 18. You have former NBA guys who are in it. You have former college stars who are in it. You have overseas players who are in it. And it's sort of like a March Madness-style tournament that anybody can join. So when it first launched, it was streamed online. And I think the prize was $50,000. And now 2 years later, they have an ESPN deal. A lot of people probably saw the tournament on TV. The championship game streamed on Tuesday. And, yeah, the prize was $1 million last year, and now it's $2 million this year. So that prize money keeps going up.
That's unbelievable. Now, again, as you mentioned, $2 million was the prize for this year's winner. How does a summer basketball tourney pay out that kind of money? What led to this basketball tournament, you know, really picking up steam over the years?
Yeah, well, for one, I think the concept for it draws a lot of people in. We have a lot of people who do, you know, pro-am leagues over the summer anyway, so, you know, might as well do one that makes you some money. It's a concept that, you know, ESPN reached out to them after the first tournament to, you know, stream, and they have an endorsement with Jack Links and a couple other endorsements, so the money kind of rolled in. I mean, of course, there's like investors behind the scenes, things like that. But really just the concept of the tournament is, you know, what's driven, you know, people to come in and endorse and, you know, want to support this thing because, you know, you have all these names who are in it. Like you have Mike Bibby and then White Chocolate, Jason Williams in there this year. So really just the overall appeal of it is what draws people in. And, of course, that leads to, you know, more money coming in as well.
Now, I want to talk about the backgrounds of some of these players. You just mentioned former NBA stars like Mike Bibby and White Chocolate Jason Williams, who I really used to be a big fan of back in the day, especially when he balled out for the Sacramento Kings. The backgrounds of some of these players who participate. Again, you know, you have a few college players. You have former NBA greats. What are the backgrounds of these players? And can this be a springboard for some of them to boost their basketball moxie and possibly, you know, raise some eyebrows to their moxie being attributed to the league? You know, have you seen any players play in this tournament that have a chance at making the NBA?
Yeah, well, you have guys playing in the tournament who, you know, were former NBA draft picks, you know, were signed into a team and, you know, may have panned out, you know, of course, as White Chocolate did or may not have panned out. It attracts a lot of guys who I think, you know, most are just in it for the money. You know, obviously current college and NBA guys can't play in it, but yeah, for example, you have college alumni teams who play. Michigan State had an alumni team that was in there, for example. Kansas State had a team in there. Kentucky had a team in there. And they really, I think for the most part, you look at most of the guys who are in it, you have a lot of guys who are either just past their prime and, you know, are still looking to play some ball, and you have guys who are still in their prime and are playing in, you know, Europe, you know, China, you know, wherever it may be. Because when you look at the payouts for this thing, like this year, the team that won Overseas Elite, a lot of guys on that team, once you divide the money up, so a lot of those guys make close to $200,000, you know, just from 6-7 games of work, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the appeal there. You're making a season's worth of money and, you know, what two or three weeks worth of, you know, basketball.
I tell you what, sign me up, man. Oh, my goodness. It's a lot of moolah for the winter. Now, which MSU players, as you just mentioned, Michigan State had a team. Which MSU players did you see this year participate in the tourney?
Yeah, so, I guess for one, the way the teams are organized, you have players, and then you have coaches, and then you have boosters who boost the team. So Tom Izzo was a booster for the team this year. And a few of the players, I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm actually looking it up now.
Right.
Yeah, but you have Brandon Wood, Charlie Bell, Brandon Kearney, Corey Lucius, Raymond Morgan, Derek Nix. Like, these are all very big names. Devon Rowe, Darrell Summers, Travis Walton.
Wow.
So, yeah, like, you know, former MSU greats who were, you know, with the Spartan Heroes tournament. So you see what kind of power this tournament has. I mean, especially for, you know, the alumni teams. It really draws in fans who just want to see these guys on the court again.
Do you know how far Michigan State got in this year's tourney?
I don't think they made it to the – they didn't make it past the Sweet 16. I can't remember what round they lost in. But, yeah, they didn't make it past the Sweet 16.
Oh, boy, I know Tom Izzo hopes some of that success can rub off. Well, would have rubbed off on his team last year, I tell you that. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Omari Sankofa, former sports writer for the State News, now a contributor for Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush. Now, you know, how – again, I talk about, you know, the basketball tournament acting as a springboard for the careers of some to possibly have a shot at the NBA. And I want to briefly read a quote here that I found very it really stuck out to me. Mike Cabango. Am I saying that right, Omari, first off?
Yes.
Mike Cabango. He played 2 years at Texas. He went undrafted, now plays in the D-League. During his press conference, he had this to say, and I'm reading this straight from Omari's article. Quote, "We have a special group. I don't know if guys know this, but this is kind of crazy to go on a 12-game run like we did and do it against this caliber of players. People are underestimating the tournament. This tournament has a lot of great players that needs to be told out there. We're not playing against scrubs. We're playing against professionals, guys that have been doing this year in and year old for years." Now, that's an interesting quote to me, Omari, because I want you to kind of make the distinction between what this tournament is about in comparison to that of summer leagues and in summer league pro-ams like that of the Moneyball here in the area. And by the way, the Moneyball finals will be taking place tonight at Aim High out in Diamonddale. What is the difference between this tournament and different pro-ams you see throughout the nation?
I think a lot of different pro-ams are more of a, well, you know, for one, I don't know how many tournaments out here, you know, have a $2 million reward. I mean, that's a really, really high sum of money, you know, especially for what amounts to, you know, a month of basketball. Mm-hmm. I also think it just attracts a lot more big names. You know, like you look through the rosters, you see a lot of guys where it's just like, oh, wow, you know, I remember, you know, watching him play, you know, 5-6 years ago. Or, yeah, he was really good in college. You know, I don't know what happened to him now. You know, he may be playing, you know, in Belgium or in you know, whatever country it may be, but it just attracts all these different guys from all over the world. And I think that's what separates it. Like, you have 64 teams in this thing. So it's just this really big tournament with all these different people in it.
Yeah, and you're talking about money, of course. Yeah. I was chatting with Desmond Ferguson, who is the organizer of the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am, and they can't pay out any money to the players or the winner, or they can't even charge individuals who come out to watch the tourney. I mean, admission is totally free because of NCAA rules. I mean, that sort of ties the hands of what Ferguson can do as far as rewarding the players. But at the same time, you know, it's such an interesting tourney. You know, when you evaluate that component of it, the money standpoint of it, as well as in comparison to other tourneys out there. For you, Omari, you know, when you watch this tournament, who is the best player that really stood out to you?
Okay, so in the Final Four, you had, of course, Overseas Elite, who won the entire thing. You had City of Gods, who had some former NBA guys in there, like Michael Sweetney and James White, whoever names.
Nice.
Yeah, so that just shows, you know, the guys who end up in this thing. And then you had the Colorado alumni team and the Bradley alumni team. For Colorado, there's a guy named Marcus Hall, who, I mean, he's a guard, but he was electric in both games, the Final Four and the championship game. I mean, he kind of reminded me of Brandon Jennings in that he has like a slight frame, but can heat up and just hit a lot of shots and just quick. He's like extremely passionate. I really don't know how much of a springboard the tournament would be for some of these guys, but I think Markusov for sure is the guy that probably stuck out most to me in the two games I went to.
Marcus Hall, well, where is he from?
And he played for the Colorado alumni team.
Colorado alumni team. Okay, we'll be on the lookout for him then. And also, Amari, I know you're still following what's taking place out here in East Lansing with Tom Izzo's squad, and I'm pretty sure you've seen a lot of the highlights coming from the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am with Miles Bridges and Josh Langford and Nick Ward. Really exciting stuff. What are you most excited about when it comes to this incoming MSU freshie basketball class?
You know, it's been a while, or, you know, of course, this probably hasn't ever happened, but Michigan State's had a class that's good, you know, and the talent's been evident right off the bat. I mean, you know, I've seen the highlights from, you know, the Moneyball tournament on YouTube. I mean, that's driving a lot of hype. For me, and it's probably just more because, you know, I've covered the team in the past, so I don't know how much this will mean to a fan. But for me, I really want to see how Izzo is able to transition from a team that was heavy on vets with Valentine, you know, Forbes, who, you know, was here 2 years but was still a four-year player, and, you know, those guys, to, you know, a team that's going to have a lot of young talent and is going to skew more towards the young guys. Because these aren't guys that, you know, I think you can only play 10 minutes a game. Some of these guys are going to warrant, you know, starting minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's really going to be a different team next year compared to what we've seen in the past from Michigan State squads, you know.
Right, so true. And do you have a surprise player? Do you have a name that really is going to surprise and turn a lot of heads this year for the Michigan State team?
You know, I could go with an easy pick. I could go with one of the Rickies, or I could go with Aaron Harris. But this was my pick last year as well. If you look at Michigan State's lack of size next year, I think this is going to be the year Gavin Schilling puts it together. There's always one guy, one four-year guy, who seems to surprise people when, you know, just really puts on a good season. Last year was Matt Costello, and this year I think with Schilling, you know, with his athletic tools and inconsistency in the past, I think this year he's really going to put it together and be a key piece for him.
That's a very solid pick, Omari. I'm going with Tum-Tum, but you can't go wrong with Gavin Schilling. He has a tremendous upside. All right, before we get you out of here, Omari, one last one. I'm just going to give you the forum to just weigh in and get anything off your chest when it comes to this whole Draymond Green Snapchat story. And also, even prior to that, the whole Draymond Green situation when it came to Jermaine Edmondson. I mean, what do you make of Draymond Green's off-the-court troubles this summer?
Yeah, it's, I mean, guys have gotten in far worse trouble than, you know, what he's dealt with. The Jermaine Edmondson situation is, you know, for one, it was just funny that, you know, something that happened after Rick's made national news because everybody has crazy Rick stories.
Very true, very true. I got a few myself, Omari. I hear you.
So that was the funniest part to me. Just, you know, you're reading a Reddit thread about this whole Draymond thing, and people on the Reddit are sharing Rick stories to, you know, and it's like, okay, do people have Rick stories over the country? I mean, all this stuff kind of came out after that. Then the second funniest thing was that after the Snapchat situation, Draymond claimed there was a hack on Twitter. And if you understand anything about Snapchat, I don't know how that could possibly be a hack. You know, that goes against what Snapchat's all about.
Yeah, exactly. So, totally goes against what it's all about, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is no way that could possibly be a hack. I mean, so it's been an interesting summer for Draymond. Looking for him is nothing that will have any serious ramifications going into the season. And now, you know, he's overseas in Rio, so maybe he'll stay out of trouble over there. But, yeah, he definitely needs to be careful because it's just been a series of bad luck for him.
Yeah, without a doubt. Hey, Draymond, just go play basketball, brother. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Omari Sankofa, formerly of the State News, now a contributor for Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush. Omari, always a good time chatting with you, my man. Thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will chat about the Detroit Tigers, winners of 8 straight. I kid you not. And also, we'll have Throwback Thursday on tap for you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. The Detroit Tigers, they stood still at Monday's trade deadline, in part because they felt that players coming off the disabled list could give them a boost soon. Well, I don't think anybody could have predicted what J.D. Martinez gave them in his first at-bat. The first pitch he saw since coming off the 15-day disabled list earlier in the day after missing 6 weeks with a fractured elbow. He was held out of the lineup after playing a doubleheader on a rehab assignment out in AAA Toledo on Tuesday. But then Brad Ausmus took a chance with him off the bench, hitting in place of James McCann. And then this happened, folks.
Look who's pinch hitting. J.D. Martinez getting a standing O.
How about this place?
Well, if he hits one out right here.
Huh?
Sale goes to work. Oh, swing and a run! Deep left center field! Sale, it's 2-1 Tigers.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You couldn't have written that better last night. J.D. Martinez coming up clutch, game tied. He hasn't seen Detroit Tigers action in quite some time, 6 weeks to be exact, and he does that. An estimated 434 feet left center field. And big shout out to Michigan State's own Mario Mpemba on the call on Fox Sports Detroit last night for that. But you couldn't have written that better. Unbelievable, folks. Martinez, first major league pitch he had seen since June 16th. And it was his second career pinch hit home run, his third career homer in 32 plate appearances against Sale, who fell to 3-4 a lifetime at Comerica Park despite a season-high 10 strikeouts over 8 innings. That was huge. That was huge, and it was so fun to watch. And I got a few moments that mattered when looking at last night's game. I mean, Nick Castellanos trying to hit a ball to the right side to advance Miguel Cabrera from second base with one out in the fourth. Then he got enough of a Sale fastball to drop a soft line right inside the right field line for an RBI double. That was huge. And then, you had Morneau. You know, Morneau, he took Michael Fulmer deep with two outs in the seventh inning for a solo home run to actually tie things up. And you started to say to yourself, okay, this is going to get very interesting down the stretch of this game. How about the defense of Mr. Jose Iglesias? He sent the game into the bottom of the eighth with a highlight stop, you know, ringing up in the middle and diving to smother Tim Anderson's ground ball before throwing him out at first. That was huge. If you haven't seen that play, you gotta check it out. You know, Iggy to Miggy. That was sick. And, you know, when you evaluate things, though, you know, for Michael Fulmer, how good has he been this year? I think the favorite right now for the American League Rookie of the Year, Fulmer, with his outing last night, he lowered his ERA for the season to 2.42, the second lowest by a Tigers pitcher through his first 17 career starts since 1920. How about that? So, Jordan Zimmermann, 9-4 in the year with a 3.95 ERA. He returns from the DL to start in the series finale, marking his first outing since June 30th. JD is expected to return to the Tigers lineup in right field for the first time since mid-June. Game time is happening right now. And to give you all an update of how things are panning out in that one, the Chicago White Sox have a 6-1 lead in the top of the second. So not a great start for the Tigers in this one. Maybe that 8-game win streak will come to a halt. But nonetheless, the Tigers, you can't argue, Isaac, this is the hottest team in baseball.
It is. I mean, now there are 11 games over 500. The first time, like we mentioned yesterday on the show, that they were 10 games over since
2014.
Exactly. Unbelievable. And J.D. Martinez, a much-needed infusion of energy for this team, which seems weird to say when you're talking about the hottest team in baseball. But at the same time, you know that baseball is a game which is full of ups and downs. It's a vicious cycle, and if you're down, it'll keep hitting you. If you're up, it's a long season. You can only be up for so long. And the Tigers not making a trade, you had the feeling they needed a boost from their returning players. They got one, and obviously not the best follow-up showing from Jordan Zimmerman, but you know what? You got time. If you lose one game out of the last 10, that's not too bad. You'll take it.
Yeah, you'll definitely take that, right? So they are currently, right now, as the standings look, they are two games in back of the Cleveland Indians. So we'll see how everything pans out here. Again, right now, give you guys an update in the finale of the Chicago White Sox and Detroit Tigers series. In the bottom of the second inning, the White Sox have a 6-1 lead as Jay Zim makes the start for the Tigers today. I wanted to get to my Mount Rushmore basketball on today's show. I'll postpone that again for tomorrow's show. We'll go out with a bang on Friday, folks. But hey, we got to end this Thursday edition of Current Sports like we do each and every fourth day of the week with Throwback Thursday. What exactly happened on this particular date in sports history? Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman, back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Good. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, time for Throwback Thursday. In 1934, Mel Ott, I love that name, became the first Major League Baseball player to score 6 runs in a single game. In 1956, William Hertz became the first person to race a motorcycle over 200 miles per hour. He was clocked at 210. Slow down, dude. That's fast. All right, 1957, Juan Fangio won his final auto race in captured the World Auto Racing Driving Championship. It was the 5th consecutive year to win. 1983, New York Yankee outfielder Dave Winfield. He threw a baseball during warmups and accidentally killed a seagull. After the game, Toronto police arrested him for, quote, causing unnecessary suffering to an animal, end quote. That's a crazy story, Isaac. Have you seen the video of that?
No, I have not. What?
I can't believe they arrested him.
I think I have. I think I might have. I don't know.
Can you believe they arrested him? That's crazy, right? All right, 1984, Carl Lewis won a gold medal in the L.A. Olympics. In 1985, Tom Seaver of the Chicago White Sox achieved his 300th victory. And in 1996, Jose Tuguani won a gold medal after finishing first in the marathon. He became the first Black South African to win a gold medal. That wraps up Throwback Thursday, and that wraps up the show. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a great Thursday. And be easy, people.